elections.
And finance?
Government Operations Committee. Has anyone looked at our last minutes and have a motion on it? Representative Lee?
Thank you, Chair. I did review the minutes, and I am actually wondering if we can make some edits to the minutes.
What was the proposed edit?
So I have two proposed edits. So let's see. So I just thought it might be helpful to note that the overview that we received about the Office of the Secretary of State's performance audit was from 2013. Or that it was that 2023. It was that November 2023 report. And then the second proposed edit is that Judy Randall, legislative auditor, gave an overview of their 2018 voter registration evaluation.
Representative Lee, how about if it's just stated on both the most recent?
Oh, do you mean their most recent OLA reports?
Correct, Representative Lee. These are the most recent ones, and part of the presentation, as stated during that committee meeting, was to help the committee understand, some of the background, and we even discussed some of the changes that happened since those reports. I mean, it's okay to have the years, but, frankly, it should most appropriately be they gave the most recent reports, but what did you want? I mean, how, it's up to you to make your proposed amendment. The other thing we could do is just lay over the minutes till the next meeting, and then we can talk offline and get them in a version. That way we'd aren't doing minutia when we've got some bills before us.
Yeah, understand. We have really important bills before us. I just wanted to make sure that it was actually that we did not, that the minutes reflected that we did not have a discussion about the voter registration process, but that it was just that 2018 OLA report. Yeah. So we'll work offline on this. Yeah.
Okay, that sounds good. Anyone want to move to table the minutes?
I'll move to table the minutes. Yeah.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Tabled. Next, if Representative Ingen would come up to the testifiers table, and we will hear House File 72. And state your name and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's great to be back in the Elections Committee. I was here for a very short-lived period of time, but you couldn't keep me away. So I want to share with you House File 72 this morning, this afternoon. What time is it? Members, House File 72 is about one thing and one thing only, eliminating the inherent conflict of interest that arises when politicians are able to appropriate money to the same organizations who finance and fund their reelection efforts. In 2023, $1.1 billion in state appropriations went directly to earmarked nonprofit organizations who, under current state law, are eligible to donate directly to candidates, party units, and political groups who have a vested interest in partisan election outcomes that benefit their ideological persuasions. The bill before you today would simply ensure that the tax dollars received by nonprofit organizations are not being spent on influencing the outcomes of elections, but rather being used to benefit the public good, as was originally intended and approved by the legislature upon appropriating money to that said organization. This bill will bring to heel a large portion of the unethical and irresponsible dark money campaign apparatus that voters on both the left and the right agree needs to end. In essence, this would return political influence to the voters we work for instead of the organizations who utilize their nonprofit status for both personal or political gain. And I will yield for any questions there, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ingen. And since I recognize you from being part of the committee, and I believe Representative Altendorf is going to move your bill.
Chair Quam, please move HF 72. I make a motion.
Yeah.
I'd like to make a motion to please move HF 72.
To the general register. General register.
Yeah, some of the people are a little bit, newer. The motion would be to move HF 72 to the general registry.
Chair, I'd like to please move HF 72 to the general register.
Thank you. And Representative Ingen, you're completed with your
yes,
intro.
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yield for any questions.
Is there any Representative Greenman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just before I ask a few questions, is your intent to hear the bell and then to entertain amendments after we do questions? Just sort of wondering how you want to. I think that there's a couple of amendments.
Representative Greenman, the thought was that if there were questions to the bill itself, and then we would move on to the amendments, and we can debate each amendment as it comes forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And thank you, Representative Elkins, or Engen, also not on the committee, Elkins. Question for you about, because I have an amendment to potentially make this more useful, but when we talk about organizations that spend money in elections, 501c3s by law, according to the IRS, cannot spend money in elections. Are you aware of any grants to nonprofits that are 501c4s or other organizations that can spend money in elections?
501c4.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 501c4s are limited to expenditures outside of their mission statement. It's supposed to be 49% or less of their mission statement on other expenditures. So 51% must be going towards their direct mission. If they were to donate to other groups or subsidiary groups of a potential PAC or independent expenditure group, other principal campaign apparatus type organizations, then that would be applicable. And I think that the question that you're asking pertaining to 501c4s is a little bit different, but.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'll rephrase the question. If this is applicable to, if what we're trying to do is stop organizations who are getting government resources from spending in elections, to the extent that we make grants to 501c3s, they're already prohibited from doing that by federal IRS law. They cannot spend money in elections. That's what makes you a tax exempt charity. So the question I was asking is, and I agree with you, on 501c4s, mm-hmm. which can spend money in elections, and there's some limits, but they can spend money. Are you aware of any 501c4s that have been getting federal state grants, and thus this would apply to them?
Not off the top of my head, no, Mr. Chair, no, Representative Greenman. But I know that 501c3s, which are exempt from being able to spend in elections-related electioneering purposes, they're also using that direct aid to funnel that to a subsidiary organization or a different group who then is engaging in spending. So it is a little bit of a catch-22. They'll use a different apparatus to continue that influencing of elections.
Representative Ingen, are you referring to things like PACs and
that
such
is correct,
things?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Greenman.
Thank you. And this might be better for the tax committee, if there is a 501c3 and a 501c4 and they're affiliated with a PAC, that money is raised very differently in their different political organizations. If there are 501c3s that are actually raising tax-exempt dollars and giving them to a 501c4, that would be a violation of tax law, and I'm not aware of that. I guess back to this bill, and I have a few amendments to actually, I think, I agree that we want to make sure that when we are spending state dollars, that it's gone for the things that Minnesotans want us to be spending money on. And I also agree that we should be really careful about the folks who get not just grants, but also tax breaks and all sorts of things in the way they're trying to influence the election. So when we get to amendments, I'll have an amendment that I actually think will apply this bill to a set of people who actually are spending money in our elections and getting the benefit of government decision making. I think as it relates to now, it feels a bit like a message bill because 501c3s, which are the folks who are getting government grants, as you're talking about, are legally prohibited from spending money in elections. So I think the set of people it would cover would be zero.
Representative Greenman, since there's no one else on the list and it seems as if your amendments are integral to the questioning of the structure of the bill, why don't we go ahead and you make your amendments and we can go forward.
Thank you, Representative Quam. I would offer the A1 amendment.
So Representative Greenman moves the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Representative or Chair Quam. And I just explain a little bit. It's pretty self-explanatory. It's a nice short bill with a nice short amendment. But what this would do was expand the language to include both corporations and nonprofits that have received resources, and not just direct appropriations of grants, but also deductions, credits, any expenditure, any benefit that they will have received from the from Minnesota. And I think it follows the same principle, which is to say, if we're worried about folks who are getting a benefit of government having a conflict of interest with then going and spending money on campaigns, it just seems self-explanatory that the $1 billion of tax expenditures that we do for things like the research and development tax credit, the data centers, which is the data center, I think tax credit is up to $110 million and goes to a few of the richest companies in the world. I think that we should, that it makes sense to apply to that. And that's what this amendment does, is it just explains the language to include not just nonprofits, but also corporations and folks who are not just getting grants, but also getting deductions, credits, or any tax expenditure being offered.
Representative Ingen.
Well, I appreciate your methodology and coming up with this amendment. It's outside the bounds of what we're looking at here. We're looking at direct appropriations to a specific organization who is then using that money outside of the purview of performing said duty that the legislature had appropriated that money for, and then going outside of that to spend in political-related spending. So I'd love to work with you offline on something that narrowly tailors to this amendment that you're looking at bringing here, but I think it is outside of the purview of what I'm trying to do here, and for that reason I'd request a no vote on it.
Representative Ann.
Thank you, Representative Quam. I appreciate your opportunity to work with you. It's disappointing because if the goal is to create both transparency and avoid conflict of interest, and I think we should be for avoiding conflict of interest, I think we should be a model unlike what's happening at the federal level. It would just make sense that, I mean, you can name Meta is one of the biggest beneficiaries of the data center's tax credit. So to me, by not sort of expanding it to both corporations and to the other ways that that folks get direct dollars from the state, just mostly seems like a political bill. And I would look forward to keep working with you, but think it's pretty a pretty self-explanatory of an amendment.
Representative Ingen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe this is a question for nonpartisan, but I believe that nonprofit organizations may issue a donation directly to a campaign in the state of Minnesota, while I know for a fact that corporations cannot do the same. Is that something that could be verified?
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ingen, that is correct in some respects. It sort of depends on the type of organization it is. I actually see Mr. Segerson in the back row who might be able to talk a little bit more specifically about the types of nonprofits that might contribute to a committee under Chapter 10A. So the answer is it depends.
Sorry to put you on
the
spot.
We do have a couple of empty seats there if you want to enlighten us.
Thank you. Apologies.
Please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Jeff Sigurdsson. I'm the executive director with the Campaign Finance Board. I believe you're referring to in 211B15, there is an exception for limited types of nonprofit organizations to make contributions to in Minnesota. Give me a moment to get turned to. And Mr. Chair and members, 211B15, subdivision 15 provides that a nonprofit corporation is exempted from the prohibition on making contributions if it is not organized or operating for the principal purpose of conducting a business, two, has no shareholders or other persons affiliated so as to have a claim on its assets or earnings, and three, was not established by a business corporation or a labor union and has a policy of not to accept significant contributions for those entities. Any other type of association that is not a for-profit corporation in which to donate over $750 into Minnesota politics would have to form a political fund. That sort of association has to report through to the board through a political fund, which reports the general treasury money that it's moving into its political fund. Usually it's going to be donations from its members for if they're going to make contributions directly to candidates or party units. If they're going to make donations to independent expenditures, then they can take corporate contributions and move those into a political fund that's for independent expenditures.
Thank you, Mr. Sigurdsson. Representative Freeman.
In the Senate rooms. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess we go back to the term nonprofit means different things, right? There's 501c4s, there's 501c5s, there's 501c3s. And when we talk about, and I think in your introduction, you talked about nonprofit grants, both directly legislatively appropriated as well as direct appropriations, those are 501c3s. And this is a federal tax law issue. And so when we talk about nonprofits under campaign finance, those are, unless they are violating federal law, which I don't think you are accusing folks of, then we're talking about C4s and maybe C5s, maybe associations, and those are not the organizations that are receiving legislative grants. And so I go back to if the principle is trying to say people who are individually benefited. I mean, there's nothing that stops Meta, for instance, from having a political fund that is the Meta political fund that is their money going into political funds. They're reporting it. So I think that the sort of a distinction without the difference. But I guess what I would say is if the goal is to say for folks, we should prevent people who are receiving direct benefits from the government, from or from state spending or expenditures or anything else, if that's the goal, keeping it narrow on a set of nonprofits that, by federal tax law, can't actually participate in elections doesn't seem to accomplish that goal, and also misses, I think, where a lot of the spending is coming from, which is the corporations that have consolidated so much wealth in our system.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Final words, Rep. Ingham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman. Again, I'd love to work with you offline about this. I'm specifically talking about the $1.1 billion in direct earmarked grants to nonprofit organizations through this very legislature in the year 2023 that is going towards groups that do have an influence over election outcomes and can spend in doing so. So, again, I appreciate the comments, but I'm going to request a no vote on the amendment.
Okay. All in favor of the amendment?
Mr. Chair, could I request a roll call?
Roll call has been requested. Please take the roll.
Representative Quam?
No.
Representative Altendorf?
No.
Representative Acom?
Yes.
Representative Coulter?
Aye.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Gordon? Representative Greenman?
Yes.
Excuse me.
Gordon. Representative Gordon, what was your vote again?
No. Representative Lee?
Yes.
Representative McDonald?
No.
Representative Roach?
No.
Representative Vernig?
Yes.
There being four ayes and seven nays, the amendment does not pass.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Greenman,
I'm sorry.
You are correct. It was five ayes and six nays.
Yeah.
And it still did not pass. Representative Greenman, You had another amendment which you wish to move?
I do, and I thank you, Mr. Chair. This one we're looking for a passage, hopefully. Representative Engen, this is a disclosure bill, so this actually wouldn't change in your bill who it applies to, what it would do, and this is a bill that is about this issue that we have of, to the point of of people giving to other organizations, that make their donations transparent or opaque, not transparent. One of the things we see in every election is organizations that, you know, let's call it Minnesotans for Hot Dish, and their biggest contributors are Minnesotans for Wild Rice, Minnesotans for potato chips, and Minnesotans for, you know, hot dogs. But voters don't know who those contributors are. They don't know why they're giving it. They don't know how to evaluate that resources. And what we know is I'd say anybody knocking on doors know that voters from across the political spectrum are pretty unhappy about dark money. They're unhappy about the amount of money in our elections. The last election biennium, we both, I think that there was a lot of bipartisan discussion about how we deal with the issue of special interests and big money in our elections. But I think that there's a lot of consensus that it's a problem. What this bill does, and it's a bill that is modeled off of what they did in Arizona on the ballot, which is it requires for contributions over $5,000 that you actually know who the original source of that contribution is. And so Minnesotans for Hot Dish could still get a contribution from Minnesotans for Wild Rice, but if that contribution was over $5,000, you'd actually have to be able to say the individual person or the business that took it out of their general fund and did it. And it is been working on, I think Senator Port has it in the Senate, and the reason it's long is that it adds a bunch of protections. So if you're contributing less than $5,000, that contribution into the independent expenditure doesn't need to be reported. And then it also requires that each of these organizations have to say who the top three contributors are. And again, the real purpose of this is exactly what I think you said in the intent of this bill, which is voters should be able to know, one, who's trying to influence their vote. They should know what interests they represent, and they should have that transparency. And that's all this bill does. It doesn't actually limit any spending. It just requires that disclosure back to the original source. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman, for the amendment. I definitely understand what you're trying to get at with this. There's a couple issues that I see with the current language of your amendment. For example, somebody could contribute $4,999 and then do so a number of times, which would then make them not appear on that donor anonymity withdrawal. They could also give via third parties. They could give in other means, which would then have them shielded from that disclosure. And second, I see some issues with this because of doxing, because of potential issues that arise when somebody is no longer anonymous when contributing to, for example, the hot dish fund, which I'd definitely be a part of. But that there's some inherent issues with this particular amendment, so we should also work with this offline and see if that's something that we could bring potentially to a floor amendment at a later date.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. I think hopefully we'll have the actual bill up. I think it goes nicely with your bill, but I think we'll keep working on it. The bill, I believe, it actually does respond to what you're saying, which is it's $5,000 within the cycle. And so to your point, I think working on campaign finance laws, you need to make sure that you are trying to avoid folks structuring their contributions in a way that avoids transparency and disclosure. Right now, they don't even have to disclose it. And so the bill actually does cover that. To the doxing point, actually on the official side, so when we as candidates or when candidates raise money directly into the campaign funds, you already have to disclose. This is already the law, right? Somebody can't give you a contribution that is from Minnesotans for Hot Dish and without knowing who that original source is. So what this does is says on the independent expenditure side, it's a higher threshold, but it basically says you're going to have the same kind of transparency that we already have to provide as candidates. And so I think that voters, again, if you're spending more than $5,000 in the race, in a race to influence people, and you're doing it not by contributing directly to a candidate, but doing it on the outside, the court, the Citizens United, has said you can do that in an unlimited way. But I do think people have the right to know who's doing that, and I think right now our laws don't provide for that. So it's unfortunate you're not adopting it today. I look forward to continuing to work on this and plan on dropping the bill. But I would ask I would ask for a roll call, and I'd ask for a yes vote.
All right. Okay. You please take the roll.
Chair Quam.
No.
Vice Chair Altendorf.
No.
Representative Acom.
Yes.
Representative Coulter.
Aye.
Representative Davis.
No.
Representative Gordon.
No.
Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Yes.
Representative McDonald.
Nay.
Representative Roach.
No.
Representative Vernig.
Yes.
Seeing five ayes and six nays, the amendment does not pass. Was there a Representative Coulter?
excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for members' reference, I'm offering the A2 amendment. And this is an amendment, I think, based on, how you representing and how you have described your bill, I think really just sort of cuts to the chase and gets after what I think we all have heard to represent Greenman's point on the doors, but I think more broadly, too, which is that folks are just sick of the outside dollars. They're sick of these organizations. And, how many folks really look at the disclosure at the bottom of the mail pieces they get or whatever and see, it's from a 501c4 or it's from whoever. Folks are just sick of the outside dollars. They're sick of these organizations who may or may not know what's actually happening in our communities spending to attempt to influence elections. And so really all this amendment does is just make it clear that the only people who can spend on elections, who can make campaign expenditures are people. And kind of feels like that didn't used to be such a revolutionary concept, but here we are. So that's my amendment.
Thank you, Ms. Representative Coulter. And I like that you're trying to get rid of sickness. Representative Inga.
Despite my voice, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Coulter, for the amendment. I believe that this would actually create some inherent constitutionality questions, and this would be litigated potentially all the way up to the Supreme Court, where they've already ruled on this. So with that being said, I'd love to work with you offline as well, find out ways where we can crack down on that dark money that is influencing a lot of our elections. In particular, my bill is trying to address the $1.1 billion in direct appropriations towards nonprofit entities who received money in 2023 alone. But again, would love to work with you offline about this, but I would request a no vote on the amendment.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do want to emphasize a point, first of all, that Representative Greenman made, that it sounds like from some of the comments that have been made here that we are alleging violations of federal law. We all serve on committees that have heard direct appropriations from the state, and I'm not by any means encyclopedic, but I am certainly not aware of any state appropriations, grants, et cetera, that have gone to 501c4s. And 501c3s are prohibited under federal law from spending on elections. So first of all, it makes me wonder, I mean, if that's the issue with people violating law, then I don't know that we need to be rewriting the law. But I will just request a roll call on this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Coulter. Please take a roll.
Chair Quam.
No.
Vice Chair Altendorf.
No.
Representative Akum.
Yes.
Representative Coulter.
Aye.
Representative Davis.
No.
Representative Gordon.
No.
Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Yes.
Representative McDonald.
Nay.
Representative Roach. No. Representative Vernig.
Yes.
Seeing five ayes and six nays, the amendment did not pass. Representative Ingen, a closing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, this is about making sure that Minnesota's elections are determined by Minnesotans. And anything we can do to crack down on the dark money campaign apparatus that's currently creating an inherent conflict of interest amongst both legislators and those entities and organizations, we should try to fix. So I mean this with sincerity. I want to work with you guys on the other side of the aisle when it comes to finding amendments or ways in which we can agree on eliminating some of this. So please, if we could talk offline, I'd be more than happy to do so. But to Representative Coulter's point that this simply isn't happening, I would refer to Dina Winter, who actually did a very large deep dive into some of the $1.1 billion in spending that was appropriated in 2023. One of the organizations, Ishurun, was appropriated over $4 million in state money, and then later on went to file a 2020 political action committee, kind of a side gig alongside this nonprofit, and their 990 is showing that both the nonprofit and the PAC is registered out of the exact same address, and utilizing state funds interchangeably with that PAC. So this is an inherent conflict. It's something that we should crack down on, and it's something that we should say no more to. So again, thank you to the members of the Elections Committee for the lively discussion and debate, and I'd love to continue working with you guys offline about this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ingen. Representative Altendorf, did you want to renew your motion?
Yes, I would like to make a motion that HF 72 is moved to the general register.
Representative Altendorf renews her motion.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Did we want a roll call on this, Mr. Chair?
Representative McDonald, are you requesting a roll call?
Mr. Chair, I'm requesting a roll call.
Okay, please take the roll.
Chair Quam.
Aye.
Vice Chair Altendorf?
Aye.
Representative Akum?
No.
Representative Coulter?
No.
Representative Davis?
Yeah.
Representative Gordon?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
No.
Representative Lee?
No.
Representative McDonald?
Aye.
Representative Roach? Representative Vernig?
No.
There being six ayes and five nays, the bill passes. Thank you. And I'll be handing the gavel over to the vice chair and invite any testifiers to join me for House File 69 or 66.
Okay, Chair Quam, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Chair Altendorf. I would like to move House File 66, be recommended to pass, and be referred to the General Registry.
Thank you, and to your bill, if you want to describe it for us.
Okay, basically, I heard from a lot of people when a single day, being the 31st of December, was the filing day, which in effect made 8 hours to file. Also, I heard from people that they sometimes, for New Year's Eve, travel out of state to spend time with the family and or friends. And so if a person was out of state, it would be difficult for them to all of a sudden quickly change, come back, and register and file. So my intent with this bill is to ensure that there's a minimum amount of time allowed for filing. So we give the public an opportunity to think it through and decide whether they wish to run or not, have some discussions, and the time, a reasonable amount of time, to come forward and file and register. And that's the basic intent of the bill. It's fairly straightforward, and I'm anticipating some good discussion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Quam, and it looks like we have a testifier. Please go ahead and state your name for the committee.
Thank you. My name is Chip Tangen. I am vice chair and political director of the Libertarian Party of Minnesota. Chair Quam and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify. I might add that the Libertarian Party of Minnesota is one of two political parties to qualify for minor party status in the last general election. Voters deserve the opportunity to vote for candidates that are conspicuously unaligned with the two major political parties. Regrettably, Minnesota ranks among the worst states in the nation in terms of giving voters more choices on the ballot. House File 66, however, marks a small step in a positive direction. It will correct a practice that has made it all but impossible for minor party and independent candidates to get onto the ballot for special elections to the state legislature. Such candidates must collect 500 signatures from eligible voters in the district. Those signatures must be collected during the candidate filing period. In the regular election scenario, that period lasts 2 weeks. But let's look at special elections. There were four called in 2024. The first two writs of special election in 27B and Senate District 45 provided a two-day filing period. The window opened one day and closed the next day at 5 p.m. But it gets worse. The next two writs, first the infamous House District 40B writ, and then the Senate District 60 writ, both set, as Chair Kwan mentioned, a one-day filing period. The window opened on December 31st and closed at 5 p.m. that same day. In recent weeks, volunteers from the two major parties have gained experience collecting 25 signatures under another petitioning statute. Can you imagine collecting 20 times that number in a single day? Representative Viernick may will recall that Libertarians fielded a candidate in the special election in September of 2023. We were able to do that, to recruit a candidate, to get the candidate endorsed, and collect 500 signatures, because the writ for that special election provided 7 days. Now in Eagan, a suburban area where I live very close to, you can do that. In a rural district, even 2 weeks isn't enough time. So at the very least, the legislature should pass this bill to ensure that no governor will ever again issue writs of special election that deny voters the opportunity to vote for minor party and independent candidates. But I sincerely ask all of you in this room and on the committee to get to the real problem by conferring ballot access without petitioning to candidates from minor parties. And I've drafted some suggested legislation, which I'd encourage you to consider taking up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tangen. And are there any other people in the audience that want to testify on this bill? Okay, with that, is there any member discussion? Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question initially. We have a couple amendments submitted. I was thinking about offering them. I know in some committees, non-voting members have been able to make motions for amendments and so forth, and the power sharing agreement really only speaks to, voting. It doesn't actually speak to making motions. So it seems like it's up to each committee to determine how to accommodate that. So am I able to move the amendment, or should I ask one of my colleagues to do so?
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. We would prefer if another member just moved it for you. That would be great.
Sure. I'll just pick somebody, say, sitting next to me. I'm wondering if Representative Lee might be interested in moving the A2 amendment.
Representative Lee.
Sure. Thank you, Rep. Freiberg. I move the A2 amendment.
Okay. And with that, thank you, Representative Lee. Was it the A1? A2 amendment has been moved. Go ahead, Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Lee. So now during session, this bill, I understand there's kind of a balance between ensuring there's time for candidate filing, there's time for voter engagement, and there's time for as much time as possible for a district to be represented by somebody, especially during the legislative session. And you can't really accommodate each of those goals without sacrificing one of the other ones. So, I mean, I don't strongly oppose this bill. I do understand what it's trying to accomplish. Although I'd note, even in this case with the Senate District special election, there was still sufficient time for 13 candidates to file. So it does seem like if people are paying attention, they're able to get on the ballot even in this situation. So, I had a couple amendments prepared. I'm not sure I'm going to offer the A1. It goes a little further than the A, or I'm not sure I'm going to ask somebody else to offer the A1. It goes a little further than the A2. I'm hoping the A2 might be considered a friendly amendment, because your stated purpose was just to ensure there's time for filing, and this doesn't actually, the A2 amendment doesn't actually change the bill's time for filing. It just removes the section related to, it maintains the provision requiring a longer filing period, but it removes the section related to the extension of the dates between the writ and the special election. So I don't know if you'd consider it a friendly amendment, but certainly if that were to go on, I th- think I can't speak for everybody, but at least I would be comfortable voting for the bill.
Okay. Chair Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to have, you know, sit down and have a discussion on that, because I understand the two conflicting things. And I'm open to, you know, maybe making a change, you know, sitting down. I'd like to have maybe have a few people involved in that discussion because of all of the back and forth, you know, that happened recently, to get a good idea of how, if we're going to adjust that, to do it during session, you know, during session time. So I, not at this time, because I think we need a little bit further discussion, and I don't want to ignore some of the arguments that maybe were made in court that I'm not aware of, you know, about the timing and et cetera. That's why my intent was ensuring that we maintained a filing, you know, longer filing before that time. So I'm very open to having some adjustments to the in session, but I would like further discussion so we can probably sit down together before this would come to a major final vote on the floor or, you know, anything like that. So I would, at this time, vote no for the amendment.
Yep. Go ahead, Representative Farber.
I'm sorry, was the motion to move this bill to the general register? Okay, I'm seeing nods. So, I mean, I don't have a vote on this committee, at least at the moment, but I appreciate your commitment to working on this before it comes to a final vote. I mean, I guess, you know, for the members on my side, I mean, if you feel really strongly, I mean, I'd still encourage you to support the amendment, but if the, you know, if you feel really strongly, like I said, there's three different things you're trying to balance. It's the time for the candidate filing, which is what this bill is getting at, but then there's also the time for voter engagement, but then there's also ensuring that there's time for a district, as much time as possible for a district to be represented during the legislative session. So, and that last one is what the amendment's trying to get at. So if any members on this side feel particularly strongly about that criteria, you may wanna, I mean, I assume you'd wanna vote no on the bill, but otherwise, if you feel strongly about the time of filing, then vote yes, I guess. So,
Chair Kwan, did you have anything further? Any further discussion? Okay, we'll take all those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay.
Nay.
Nay. Does not pass. Right? The amendment fails. All right. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Representative Freiberg.
I guess, Chair Kwan, would you consider laying the bill over so that we could vote on it in the meantime? Or, I mean, not vote on it, discuss it in the meantime and discuss these issues, or just out of curiosity?
Chair Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would prefer to have it staged in red because of the shorter runway for this session. We've sat next to each other and worked in committee together, and you know, honestly, we'll work on trying to make sure that this doesn't bump the duration, you know, take care of the appropriate considerations, but I worry that we're going to be running short on time for bills this session. So, I will renew my motion to refer the House File 66 to the General Registry.
All right. With that, Chair Kwan. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Lee, sorry.
Madam Chair, I think there's one more amendment to move.
Oh, no. That's fine.
Okay. Representative Freiberg, you're not moving that? Okay.
No.
With that, Chair Quam renews his motion that this bill, HF 66, is referred to the General Register. All of those who approve, say aye.
Aye.
And who are against it, say nay.
No.
The bill moves forward. Chair Quam has another bill, House File 69.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would move the House File 69 be recommended for passage and referred to the general, or no, correction, referred to the Education Policy Committee, because this does impact school elections.
And to your bill, Chair Quam.
Thank you. There's been a strong effort to try and improve voter turnout for elections in the state of Minnesota. Being from a rural area, I'm familiar with places that have elections not during the normal November, even-numbered year date. And I see a almost similar to a special election type turnout. And I think we could have better participation in these other elections by moving them to that November, that Tuesday in November, for participation. I know there's some issues that are going to be brought up by testifiers for this bill or against this bill, but I think we need to move the discussion forward.
That Tuesday in November for participation. I know there's.
I think that somebody on the Zoom connection has their mic live, and I'm hearing the echo of some great wisdom words.
Thank you. He's muted now. Go ahead.
Well, I'll use a better voice so it'll carry better on the Zoom. But frankly. I really feel that if you have it so that more people vote, you get a truer voice of the people in elections. And a lot of the complications come from school elections. And I look forward to, if we move from this committee to the Ed Policy Committee, that we will have some good discussions there. I don't know if this will make it all the way to the floor, but I think it's past time where we look at how we can unify elections to more common dates. We made a step, I think, in 17 or 18 to try and have four times if they're going to have specials. So have it, you know, less variety of dates and better structure. And I think this would be another step towards having better participation in all the elections. So I will be quiet and listen to the testifiers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Quam. And with that, we do have some testifiers, so we'll move right to the first one, which is Greg Abbott, and he is online. You should be unmuted now. You can go ahead. Mr. Abbott, you can go ahead with your testimony now.
Thank you, Chair Quam and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Greg Abbott, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, as well as the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. We are in opposition to House File 69 because we feel it is unnecessary. It's a mandate that further erodes local control of school districts. School districts already have a clear and established process that it was set by the legislature to determine their school board election years, making this bill not necessary. The history of school districts choosing between odd and even year elections goes back to the 1990s, when the legislature wanted to move May school board elections to November. As part of the agreement, schools were granted the flexibility to choose even year or odd year elections, whichever election cycle best suited their local community. At the time, 168 chose odd year elections, while 172 operated in even year elections. In 2005, the federal government passed the Help America Vote Act. It required special voting machines like the AutoMark, moved elections to an optical scan system, which required public testing of equipment, renting machines. It made the process more complex and more costly. In the past 20 years, all but 25 school districts out of 331 have moved to even-year elections, including three school districts in the cities of first class. It is this puzzling part of the bill that also says the legislature trusts the locally elected school boards in Duluth, Rochester, Minneapolis, and St. Paul to make a decision on whether they think odd year or even year school elections are best. But that same trust isn't there for those same locally elected school boards in the other 25 school districts. This bill would force the remaining 25 districts into even year elections, breaking the contract set when school district elections were moved from May to November. It is also an unnecessary mandate that erodes the decision of the local community. Those 25 districts have stuck with an odd year election because they believe keeping these nonpartisan races out of a very partisan even year election system gives people a better understanding of who is running and keeps the focus of odd year elections on school issues. This mandate is not needed when only 25 out of 331 districts remain in odd year elections. The legislature has trusted school districts for over 30 years to make a local decision on whether to have odd year or even year elections. We don't believe there's any evidence that this flexibility has created problems or confusion. A mandate to force the remaining districts into even year elections is unwarranted and disrupts the system that is already functioning well. MSBA believes the legislature should keep that trust with our locally elected school board members. Thank you for allowing us to testify on the issue.
Thank you, Mr. Abbott. And the next testifier is Pierre Willett. Please state your name and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representatives Pierre Willett with the League of Minnesota Cities. While we acknowledge the motivation behind House File 69, uniformity across the state, efficiencies and cost savings for elections, and generally increase voters in even-year elections, the League of Minnesota Cities remains opposed to this legislation. The League always seeks to preserve local decision-making authority, and currently about 30 cities across the state have their local elected elections on even number years. Cities sometimes choose this path because they believe in statewide general elections, those running for office have little room to get their messages across, have trouble getting to their voters, and voters can't focus on issues during what we all witnessed in the last all-encompassing hyperpartisan election. Many cities listen to their residents and feel a change is needed one way or the other. For instance, St. Cloud recently went from an even to an odd year election through a referendum, and the city of Barnesville did just the opposite. Lastly, the League also seeks to preserve a city's ability to choose an alternative voting method like RCV, which would not be possible under current law if they were stripped of their right to hold elections in odd numbered years. Again, we feel strongly that we should preserve cities' local authority to do what they think is best for their communities and should have a choice for what is right for them. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And up next is a testifier, Jim DeMay. Please state your name.
Hello, thank you. My name is Jim DeMay, and I'm a school board member in what I call the somewhat independent school district 621, the Moundsview Public Schools. I have been involved in Moundsview Public Schools as a student, volunteer, parent, alumnus, and now as an elected school board member since 2019. I would like to actually thank everybody in the legislature for your support of our schools. The state of Minnesota has strongly supported our students and our efforts over the many years. I'm also the vice chair of AMSD this year. I'm here to testify against House File 69, or the bill requiring school elections to be held on even years. As a local elected official, I'm very sensitive to new mandates from the state and federal government. We operate in a myriad of rules and regulations. Well, all are well-intentioned, and many are proper, these mandates erode local and community control. Some mandates are costly, some are not. Some make good sense, and some are overreach. It's often a matter of where you sit. We have a long history in the Mountain View School District of odd-year elections. Odd-year elections allows our community to focus upon our school issues. Our most recent election in the fall of 2023 fielded 11 candidates for 4 seats. Our local Lions Club, Optimist Club, our local League of Women Voters, and our local parent-teacher organizations at our elementary schools hosted candidates, debates, and forum. These forums were well attended and covered by local newspapers and local cable outlets. It was a vigorous and informative debate about our local school issues. Our voter turnout was strong. I think people think that only a few folks show up to these. We had over 14,000 people vote in the Mountain View School District, and the only issue on the ballot were the 4 seats. In comparison, our 30% of registered voters turning out was more than the presidential primary in 2024. The cost? The Ramsey County Election Bureau administered our 2023 election, and the cost was $28,600. The Mountain View school leaders chose to do this because we believe that the election operates well for our community. A large fear in us moving, have our local elections move to the fall ballot on the even years, is we'd be buried and lost. While some school districts prefer even year elections, that is their local choice, and I respect that choice. Minneapolis is different from Murray County. Murray County different from Mountain View. We choose to have a focused local debate about our schools every 2 years. Even year ballots have presidents, governors, congressmen, state legislators, judges, and many people on the ballot. I read an article this weekend that the 2026 U.S. Senate race may cost over $50 million. And as all you well know, a competitive state house race cost about $90,000 without independent expenditures. In the Mountain View School District, our local school board's races have historically cost below $5,000, involving a lot of yard signs, lip pieces, local internet and newspaper advertising, and plenty of door knocks. They are really a community affair. Local school board races will struggle to get to compete with the massive campaign expenditures, and our focus on school issues once every 2 years could be lost. And over my 5 years of service on the Mountain View School Board, I have never been once challenged on our odd-year election system. Many have challenged my priorities and my qualifications, and I repeat, many, to sit on the school board. But I do have numerous and constant inquiries about curriculum, school lunches, start times, mental health, cell phones, standardized tests, class sizes, bus service, college prep, school-to-work programs, and extracurricular activities. These are our issues our families care about, and this is what we get to focus on when we have the attention of the community every 2 years during our school elections. In closing, the present system of election choice works for my district and my community. Schools get top priority, front and center, every 2 years. Our community participates in the process. We field a wide variety of candidates, and people show up to vote. Please protect our right for local choice in a system that works well. Thank you for the opportunity to provide input.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And with that, is there any other members here that would like to testify on this bill? It doesn't look like that. And do the members have any discussion? Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative, or Chair Quam. And I will say, Madam Chair, where is this headed?
To education policy.
Okay, thank you. So there'll be more discussion. I was tempted to say we should lay the bill over. One of the things that I am interested about, and I share your goal of ensuring that we folks are voting on in high turnout times. I was at an NCSL conference, and I think they said that Americans in one election will vote in vote on more things than a British citizen will in their lifetime. So here in the United States of Minnesota, people vote on all sorts of things all up and down the ballot. And so I actually support the policy of trying to figure out how we ensure that voters, that we are consolidating and we're doing things in a way that voters, that makes sense for voters, not just our jurisdictions. That being said, I think that there's a lot of questions about how this would work. With ranked choice voting and other things, I support a local option. I've always supported the ability of local jurisdictions to figure out what works best for them. And I think given St. Paul's experience with their moving their election date, I think we don't really know, but it's what that would do to those folks who have adopted ranked choice voting by referenda, most of them, I think. So I can't support it without having those questions. I'd love to work with you, but I do want to say I do support that policy of having and making sure that folks are voting in times where there's high turnout and not making it so that people have to vote every 6 months or so. So thank you, Mr. Chair. So I will not offer that amendment. It's going to Ed policy, and I'd love to keep working on it.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Greenman. And there was no particular question, right? Okay. And next on the list is Representative Vernick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Quam. So as a former school board member and a representative with two of my school districts in that list of 25, I find this really hard. Can you tell me, is there anything preventing the jurisdiction from, school boards, my passion area, from moving to an even year election?
Chair Quam.
Just for the record.
No, there isn't. Having been on the school board, and I remember when we had a referendum and we had to do all the election stuff ourselves, a lot of people were upset that we were spending the money, and I think that's why we ended up passing some legislation about 10 years ago that decreased the frequency at which you would have those off November elections. And it just bothered me, too, when we had such a small portion of the population come out for when you know, 30% for one of these is probably pretty good, but I'm used to, in November, it's in the 60s, 70s, and 80s for many areas. So you're getting over twice the amount of people participating. But I do understand that there are some issues. So a big intent of this bill is to get discussion on how we can bring more elections to the same time. We had the same debates, hosted debates. I know in the city of Rochester, there are quite a few forums and debates held for the school board races. And so on an even numbered year, it didn't have fewer opportunities for information, just more people turning out. So I understand Representative Greenman's, input. So it's the intent, and my hope is that in the education policy, we can look at what types of things we could do to move this intent forward, but I guess make sure that we go over all of the issues that the 25 out of, several, quite a few that are on the regular even years don't have.
Representative Vernick, is there a follow-up?
Yeah, so just so I understand that we're preempting local control and preventing local jurisdictions from making their own decisions on whether they value higher voter turnout in even years over more attention and focus that race in the odd, over more attention and focus provided for local races in odd years. So we're saying you can't make the decision as a locally elected school board member as to when that race makes the most sense for you and your community, because we want to force you to a higher, more partisan election year. Is that correct?
Chair Quam.
The nonpartisan races during the election on the even-numbered years where the vast majority of those are happening, I don't think are any more partisan because they're on the even-numbered years. And going over the precedence of the legislature, which multiple times has adjusted and changed and modified the regulations around elections to have uniformity and consistency and openness and fairness. So it's not a unusual thing for the legislature on elections to dictate, because when we have things sometimes not go right, it's usually because locally we didn't have it clear enough and they accidentally had issues. So the precedence is there. The idea is, let's have this discussion. And the only way I can force this discussion is with a bill. What comes out of that bill, I'm not sure. And it may take, I've had things that have taken years before it got to a point of where it was passed. And other times it's been, weeks and months. But if you don't have the discussion, you're not going to improve things. And it just hurts me when I see so few people participating because it's an odd year.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Quam. One quick follow-up. We do have a list here, so just quick.
I just want to say I really appreciate your passion about improving and having more conversation. So I would love to be part of that. And I understand Representative Greenman's concerns as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Verneig. And next on the list is Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, great. I can hear myself now. So I really appreciate the conversation here, and I think all of us want to make sure that when we do odd year elections, especially for school board members, that parents and students know who they're voting for. And I'm just echoing my colleagues here. I know this, the motion is for the bill to move to ed policy, but it might be really helpful if we lay it over and work on this more. Because the question that I actually do want to ask is about ranked choice voting and how this would impact cities like my city in St. Paul, which have adopted ranked choice voting for city council and mayoral elections would work. I know we have some complications because there was a ballot question, last November, and now, our county is figuring that out. But I think it's a really important discussion to have, and I'm just curious if nonpartisan staff or the author can explain, like, what happens if this bill were to be enacted, what happens to the five cities that have adopted ranked choice voting, like, what do they do?
Oh, the question then I was going to Mr. Gearing.
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, so I can't speak to each individual city that's adopted ranked choice voting. Obviously, the larger cities, the first-class cities, would be exempt from this bill, and so I don't think there would be effect on their process of ranked choice voting. But if there is a city that is not a city of the first class that has adopted ranked choice voting, they would either need to get approval from the county auditor to conduct ranked choice voting simultaneously with the state general election that happens at the same time, or they likely would not be able to conduct ranked choice voting at that time. I know that's been a discussion in prior bills on the ranked choice voting authorization process about whether those agreements can happen or are practical.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Did that answer your question?
I have one follow-up to nonpartisan staff. I know there was questions too about whether you could have two pieces of paper when you go vote, and what that would look like if you did ranked choice voting on one sheet and not ranked choice voting on the other. Could you explain that scenario?
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, so current law doesn't contemplate that process. That is probably a practical way that it could happen, but there's no specific authorization or prohibition in statute about conducting an election that way. That's why I'm saying that you probably need some agreement with the county auditors and probably the Secretary of State to run it simultaneously, but that has been a point of discussion in the past.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for that. And next on the list is Representative
Cole. Quickly.
Excuse me?
May I just finish really quickly?
Representative Lee, I thought you nodded. You were done. Representative Lee.
Oh, no. Thank you. And so, I don't know if Chair Quam wants to comment on this piece, but I think for me, it's very difficult to vote yes for this because I want to continue having this discussion, just like understanding, you know, if we were to pass this bill and actually make it law, like how does this affect all the other elections that our cities have chosen and the voters there have chosen to conduct? So.
Chair Quam?
You know, basically, I think there will be a lot of energetic discussion in the Education Policy Committee. During the process, we can have some discussions on, you know, the grandfathering or the other details about the very few that would be possibly impacted. But I would like to have this get discussed in the ed policy in order to, because you're talking a much broader impact than the small ones. So I guess I'm looking forward to discussions on the side, discussions in committee, the ed policy committee, before, you know, if you had an amendment, we could have, you know, looked at it. But no, I think we need to go forward and have debate and discussions. And if we had some agreement or something came up, we could always move to have it be heard again by this committee. However, we've got such a short time to do the debates, and I don't know if it will get out of the next committee or not. But I think that committee is where there's a lot of the details and argument, as you can see from the two of the three testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Quam. And then now we're going to go to Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to begin by saying that I share your view and Representative Greenman's view. And I'm glad to hear that it's a wide view that we should be doing things that maximize voter participation. As somebody who also comes from the world of local government, I will confess I'm a little bit torn on this bill. So I agree that it does, odd year elections do allow for a more focused conversation. But we had, for example, in the city of Bloomington, we had our highest turnout election in 2023 ever in city history, and it was still below 40% turnout. So I kind of struggle, I'll be honest. I do want to speak to the issue. Particularly, I think it's showing up when we talk about ranked choice voting, because I likewise represent a community that voted. Our voters in the city of Bloomington not only voted to adopt ranked choice voting, but on a separate ballot question, I think literally 2 years later, voted against repealing it. Given that sentiment that exists within my community, I think that's a big issue for me, that we would potentially be reversing the stated intent of the voters of my community. So I don't necessarily have any particular questions, but I wanted to raise that up because I do represent a community that uses ranked choice voting. The other thing I wanted to raise up, and this I know particularly applies to my hometown because we are also a charter city, but Section 9 of the bill, the law becomes effective July 1st, 2025, and no later than January 1st, 2026, the governing body must adopt a plan for a transition. So I represent a charter city. And I checked our city charter just to make sure, but it specifically states in our city charter that elections must happen in odd years. And I know that the provisions requiring ranked choice voting are also found within our charter as well. So this would be basically a 6-month runway for a pretty significant charter change within the city of Bloomington. And, you know, I don't know if that would be the case necessarily in other charter cities. And charter changes are not, those of us who have been on city councils in charter cities know, those are not easy to do in a short amount of time. And so my concern, I think the intent of this bill is good. I really do. But I think some of the details that frankly really should be ironed out in the elections committee are just not quite there yet. So that's why I am reluctantly not supporting the bill today.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. Next is Representative Acom.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the bill author. I've appreciated the conversation today. I represent five cities and three school districts, and some of them have odd year elections. Some of them have even year elections. One of my cities has adopted ranked choice voting, and because currently they can choose to do even year if they want, I'm going to be a no vote on the bill. I do appreciate some of the nuances that have been brought up and the potential areas for working together. But at this point, and because of the ranked choice issue, I'll be a no vote. But thank you.
Thank you for your comments. And Representative Freiberg, you get to go clean up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's probably the only place in the world where I would do that. So thank you for bringing this bill forward, Chair Quam. I appreciate the intention to increase voter turnout in these elections, because local elections are extremely important. I'm a former local official myself. And I know there are members of my caucus who are sympathetic to that argument as well. But we've also had this discussion about ranked choice voting and how this would remove the ability. I count three cities. Minneapolis and St. Paul are cities of the first class. They have ranked choice voting, but since they're cities of the first class, they would not be affected. I believe Minnetonka, St. Louis Park, and Bloomington are the three that would be affected by this. Is it your intention in drafting this bill to remove the ability of those cities to adopt ranked choice voting, or is it just sort of a byproduct?
Chair Quam.
I believe the language with cities of the first class was specifically because of the, you know, allowing sort of an exemption for them with the ranked choice. And if there was an amendment or a discussion on how we could cover some of the issues with the charters and the others, I'm very open to looking at what we could do on that. The main intent is, you know, That's a small side thing. The main intent was just to get more elections during the high turnout days, and that's the main intent. But I don't want to burn up any more time than we are, because I understand there's an important bill that's about to be before us.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Freiberg, you have a follow-up?
No, this is important. This is important stuff. We can discuss this. It's fine. I guess, would you be open to the follow-up question then? Would you be open to laying this over so that we can work through that issue with ranked choice voting? I think we might get at least one member of my caucus to vote. I can't say for sure, but to vote yes if you're able to kind of like take care of the issue related to ranked choice voting, but then retain the ability of these cities to require them to have even year elections, but fix that issue related to ranked choice voting, since you said it's not your intention.
Chair Quam.
Basically, vastly more involved are, I believe, the schools. And so we could work on some possible language on the side while at the same time taking care of the discussion with the schools and education policy. So, as I said before, I'm open to the possibility of recalling it to this committee, but I think we need or would like to have the debate and action in the education finance, and then we can come back after more, you know, after sitting down and talking about possible, amendments or different language, because as you noticed, noted, most of the people that vote in ranked choice elections live in cities of the first class.
Thank you, Chair Quam. And with that, Representative Freiberg.
Just a closing comment, I guess, then. I mean, I would hope maybe after this bill goes to the Education Finance Committee, it could come back here so we could look at some of that some of those issues. I mean, in the meantime, you know, I don't think we could support this just because of the impact it would have on ranked choice voting. So I would encourage my members to vote no on this until that issue can be addressed.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. And with that, just side note, but this is ed policy. I think both of you said ed finance that it was going to go to. So it does need to go there. It does need to go to that committee. And so at this point, Chair Quam, we're going to renew the motion for this to be referred to the ed policy committee. I almost said it too at this time. So all those agree, say aye.
Aye.
Those who oppose, say nay. This will be referred to the Ed Policy Committee.
The seat's warmed up for you, Representative.
That's good. That's supportive. Yeah, is that... Matt Klein's. I heard Matt. I think we should make it 5 years.
So would the motion, would the request for me to be for a colleague, say Representative Lee, to lay this bill over, lay House File 73 over for possible inclusion?
I heard Representative Freiberg. Representative Lee, did you have a motion to make?
I move House File 73 in front of the committee to be laid over for possible consideration in an omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 73 is a simple bill that would increase the political contribution refund or the PCR amount from $75 to $100. There's a letter of support for this bill in your packet from Clean Elections Minnesota. The letter notes that publicly financed donor refund programs such as the PCR empower individuals to make meaningful contributions to candidates they support and enhance voters' ability to participate in electoral campaigns. This is particularly important in the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United, which unleashed a flood of corporate spending into our elections. The PCR program has been around for over 40 years. I believe it was implemented initially in 1990. The maximum refund amount was initially set at $50, and it did not increase for decades. We finally were able to raise it to $75 in the last biennium, but that's still well below its initial value when you factor in inflation. So the bill is a simple bill. It just raises the amount to $100, which is what I think what was introduced to a couple years ago. I'm kind of interested to hear the discussion on this one.
Representative Freiberg, do you have a person that would move the amendment you have?
Sure, why not?
Okay, I move the A1.
Thank you, Representative Lee.
Yeah, so this amendment is the PCR Modernization Act, and I have to give a lot of credit to Representative Kristen Bonner, who's worked really hard on this bipartisan bill. When Chair Quam graciously offered to hear the PCR increase bill, I thought it was an opportunity to create some efficiency in the process and incorporate this bill since they are so closely related. The Modernization Act was slated to be included in last year's tax bill, but unfortunately that bill fell by the wayside at the end of the session. The PCR Modernization Act updates the program, as its name suggests. One of the drawbacks of the program is that reimbursement requests have to be submitted by regular mail. The amendment allows donors to file for a refund electronically through the Department of Revenue website. The Campaign Finance Board is required to provide receipts to parties and candidates that contain a unique identifier number that will allow the Department of Revenue to verify the contribution with the Campaign Finance Board. Receipts are only issued for donations in excess of $10 under this proposal.
Is there discussion or questions? Representative Freiberg, I want to say that I have heard from both sides of the aisle a desire on your amendment language to get that through, and you and I can work together and having that included in a an omnibus election, technical corrections, whatever that bill looks like. And I think we should have a meeting with Secretary of State Simon and make sure that, we get language set up so we don't have any issues. But I do like that amendment language. I know there's some concern about the other portion about, the dollars in that program with a deficit coming. But I don't see any additional discussion. Did you have a comment?
No, I appreciate your support. Like I said, I think this provision in the A1 amendment, which we're considering now, has bipartisan support, and I appreciate the vote of confidence from the committee. And once again, just want to acknowledge Representative Bonner's hard work on this issue.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Freiberg. I think I remember having this conversation with when Representative Torkelson was lead on the committee. There was a lot of interest, I think, within both caucuses. I think we all want to make it easier to use, since what it is about ensuring that grassroots, the folks in our districts, can participate and can make their voices heard. I will say I think that you want to work with Jeff Sigurdsson over there on the Campaign Finance Board and not the Secretary of State, just because they're the folks who would administer and help make sure that it works. And they are the, as someone who served on the Campaign Finance Board, the folks who do the hard work of making sure that the PCR works for folks. So that's just, so I appreciate this. I hope I will vote yes, and I hope we collectively can vote yes on this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Greenman, the discussion that we'd have with Secretary of State is on the technical corrections. He's stated there could be some things cleared up to take away some of the confusion and issues that pop up in recent elections. And so we'd make sure that when we pull that together, I will take your advice and we'll have a discussion. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Seems almost unanimous. It passes.
I was going to say, Mr. Chair, let the record reflect no audible opposition to the amendment.
There is a testifier, and would E. Biso? Please state your name, your affiliation for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ilali Ibiso from Clean Elections, Minnesota, and I'm here to testify in support of HF 73 that would increase the maximum refund for political contributions in Minnesota elections from $75 to $100 for individuals and $200 for households. Clean Elections Minnesota is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization working for a healthy and inclusive democracy. We thank Representative Mike Freiberg for his leadership in introducing this bill, and we support the modernization of the PCR. Increasing the amount of political contribution refund provides an opportunity to broaden public engagement in democracy and amplify the voices of ordinary Minnesotans in the electoral process. Public financing programs such as the Minnesota's PCR empower individuals to make meaningful contributions to candidates they support and enhance voter ability to participate in electoral campaigns. In 2010, the U.S. Supreme Court Citizens United decision unleashed a flood of money into our political system by finding that corporations have a constitutional right to free speech and to spend unlimited money to promote or defeat candidates for office. Since then, money has flooded into elections, much of it so-called dark money, through groups that don't disclose their donors. A clean election is financed in such a way that lack of wealth does not prevent qualified candidates from seeking and holding office. This bill will also increase the importance of small donors to candidates and increase participation by an economically and geographically more representative group of citizens. A recent Pew study found that reducing the influence of money in politics is a top policy priority for a majority of Americans, regardless of race, age, or political party affiliation. Americans across the country and the political supreme spectrum agree that the outsized influence of the wealthy few in our politics harms our democracy. In 2023, the legislature increased the amount of the refund for $50 per individual to $75 with bipartisan support. Increasing the amount to $100 for individuals and $200 for households would increase the voice of everyday voters, regardless of political affiliations. Wealthy special interests look out for themselves, not everyday Americans. HF 73 can reduce candidates' dependence on big money and is good for our democracy. We've submitted a letter that provides more detail in your packets. Clean Elections Minnesota urges this committee to vote to advance HF 73. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Representative Freiberg?
Sorry, the testifier was just asking if there was any. I know in some committees the testifiers have to sign in. She was just asking if she should. Thank you.
Thanks.
Any final comments, Representative Freiberg?
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your willingness to hear this bill. I don't know what the final budget target may end up being for this committee. I don't know if this is realistic even or not. The PCR increase, I do think the PCR Modernization Act has a very minimal cost, and that I could definitely see as something moving forward. But if we are given a sufficient target to also cover the increase, I think it's a good way to ensure that the voice of ordinary people is represented in our election system and our campaign finance system. So I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. And with that, the House File 73, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion. And I believe we have completed our committee. And it's nice to see that we agree on a fair amount of stuff, and we have a good debate. And thank you. Because of the some mandatory meetings on Wednesday, we will not have a committee. So the next committee meeting. So the next one will be next Monday, at the same G23 and 1 p.m. And with that, we are adjourned.